I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Friday, and I'm here with Anna Navarro. This is Behind the Table. Hello, Anna. How are you?
I am fine.
Happy Friday. Today, it was a great show. We had Chelsea Clinton. We'll talk about that. But the morning meeting was a struggle. It always is at the varying degrees. But today was kind of brutal. It took till I think it was like a 45, 50-minute meeting. What is your recollection? Nothing was sticking.
I have no recollection. I have like PTSD from that morning show today. Let's see. Actually, there were far worse morning shows in the past than on this show.
Sure.
But no, let's see. What...
Nobody agreed on anything.
You know what? Nobody agreed on anything. There wasn't a clear lead story.
Mm-hmm.
All the political stories were weedsy and boring, right? And things we had talked about before. Not that that's ever stopped us before, but apparently it stopped us today. It was a difficult show. And you weren't there. You didn't come in person until the end because I kind of feel like you steer it along.
I thought it was the end, but I ended up being another 20 minutes after I got there. I do think if I had gotten in earlier, I might have been able to direct
them. I think you should shed some light on this because that's one of the questions I get asked a lot,
mm-hmm.
how we choose hot topics.
Well, I think it is you guys choosing the topics. I think I put my thumb on the scale sometimes, and it's really just because if I feel like there's a big story that we're missing something or— So the way it works is every night you guys get a list of sometimes around 50 topics that our Hot Topics team led by Robin puts together every single night. And
they are divided in segments, in sections.
Sure.
So section A, section B.
Right.
So it's usually politics, pop culture and...
Yeah. And it's because the way the show breaks down, we usually get one meaty long segment to dive into and then we have shorter ones. So you don't want to try and do a complex conversation or a touchy conversation in a 4-minute segment because that's when I'm playing the music and trying to get out of there and all that. So you guys weigh in and say, I'm interested in number 2, number 7, number 9. And it's rare that there's uniform agreement on that, but we get a feel that night what we'd like. And then in the morning, there's a team that comes in early and is updating the topics and saying the breaking news of the day. And they send out the morning hot topic list. And then again, you guys kind of chime in. Maybe this one, maybe this one, maybe this one. Then at 8:30 or more likely 8:45, everybody's in the room and we start. We have producers from the Hot Topics team that start throwing out different pitches. And then we see that, A, that there's enough of an understanding of the topic, B, that there's enough different opinions on the topic, and C, that it's got the juice that we mm-hmm. think we need to carry things through. And in a perfect world, that's a 15-minute meeting. I don't live in a perfect world. I've never been in a perfect world because there's a whole team of producers and everyone waiting on people cutting tape and writing our open, our writer Christian and Frank, and everybody's ready to pounce on the show once we know what it is. But we
and sometimes
figure it
there's
out.
Really meaty issues, but some of us have not
read up.
It,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Read up on it. So I can't remember one that was going on last week or a couple of weeks ago where you said, oh, you know what it was? I think it was the Wendy Williams documentary.
Yes.
Where it was very meaty, but a lot of us had not watched the documentary. So you wanted us to watch it before
because we
discussed it.
Yeah, because it helps when you guys know what you're talking about. Obviously, you're going to put yourselves out on a ledge, give an opinion on something. You want to be able to feel comfortable in that opinion. So, you know, you guys go back and forth. And occasionally there's something where I think, like, this is the wrong decision, but the host feels strongly about it. And it's a show for women about women, and they might know something I don't know. And, okay, we'll do it. And some days there are things where I say, like, guys, you're missing the big picture here. We got to talk about this.
Right.
And I came close to that today. But we went with what you guys wanted to do. And I think it was a good segment.
No, I didn't want to do that segment.
No, you didn't. But the rest of you did.
I didn't know who those people were. I didn't watch Nickelodeon. I thought Drake was the singer.
Yeah,
Papi Steak or something. Papi Chulo. What's his Twitter handle? Papi Champagne Papi.
There you go.
At Champagne Papi. I know this.
Oddly, Drake also a child actor on Degrassi, The Next Generation.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's again, this is where we're different. So despite that, but it's a process. We go back and forth. And again, I do think I would say 90% of the time the topics are picked by you guys, but me and the other producers then meet afterwards and kind of work on the order and figure out what it's going to be. And sometimes we'll come back to you and say, we just can't do this. It's hard to get five women who have different perspectives and different backgrounds and different ages to agree on what's the important thing to talk about every day. So that's it, too. It's rare
And sometimes news, big news breaks in between the meeting that ends at 9 and the show at 11. And a lot of times I've seen you guys turn it on a dime.
Yes.
And that's the subject we talk about.
And I think that's actually, I actually love it when something breaks in the morning, as long as we have enough time to get read up on it. But something that's truly breaking, that's one of the benefits of being on a live TV show. We can turn quicker. And I've been here, this is my 9th season. And I look at it and I realize that we're able to, our audience is not interested in evergreen stuff. They're not interested in old topics that could be on any given show. They want to have you guys react to the stuff they're talking about that morning. And a lot of them want to learn about what's going on in the world that morning. So that's what we try to do every day.
Well, as you know, I hate evergreen stuff too.
Yes.
And I like meaty political stuff.
Absolutely.
But I don't always win the argument.
No, you don't always win the argument. We try to get a quorum. We try to get, I'd like to have 4 out of 5 people happy if I can get there.
You should win.
Or 2 out of 5 and one of them's joy. How about that? Yeah. So, all right. Well, the other great debate on the show today was, do men need women? This one, I mean, come on. How would your husband Al do without you? I missed a lot of this because my eyes rolled out of my head at your response.
No, truly, he would die. I mean, he would. I mean, Al has had, first of all, okay, you know, Al is an older generation of Cuban male who had a doting mother, a little sister. I mean, this is a man who does not know how to run a household. He just doesn't. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he doesn't know how long things need in the microwave. He doesn't know how to fix something that it doesn't occur to him that maybe a circuit blew and that he's got to go reset the circuit because the blow dryer isn't working. I mean, those things, he's not good at this. He doesn't grocery shop. His domesticity from 1 to 10, he's like at -5.
Okay.
You, well, on the other hand.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I think you're very useful. I think Steve, Joy's husband, does a lot of things. Look, I think you guys.
My wife would disagree with you,
like,
probably.
If you were left alone in your house.
Yes.
For a month without your wife.
Yeah, yes.
Could you survive in your house by yourself? Could you feed yourself?
Absolutely.
Could the house be clean?
Absolutely. Well, I feed myself now most of the time, and I clean my own clothes, and I do all that kind of stuff. So, yes, I'd be pretty okay, I think.
I'm not
taken care of, I would say. Yeah.
No, I will die.
My wife is a tremendous mother and does the lion's share of the work with our kids and is fantastic. But I wouldn't say, like, tending to my needs is a number one priority.
Listen, Al has a female dog, a wife, and we have a full-time housekeeper because I travel so much, I need somebody to help in the house.
Yeah.
And even then, this man still, he's lost.
Well, God bless. I think personally, I disagreed with your take today that as a panel that men are completely useless, but I respect the women at the table and what they believe in. How about that? Am I selling that? No, not really. All right. Let's talk about the biggest scandal at The View at the moment. And it's all about Taylor Swift swag. And I stumbled into this today. I had no idea. So Disney, which is our parent company, sent the co-host some Eras Tour press boxes, which is amazing. And it was to celebrate her tour dropping on Disney Plus. What I didn't realize is everyone wanted the swag that was in these boxes. Did you notice this?
Okay, so to put this in context, we get a lot of promotional material sent to us and a lot of swag. We get boxes and things with things all the
promotional
time.
Promotional
stuff from TV shows, books, things like that. I have never had the kind of response to something like we did with this Taylor Swift box. So I start getting emails, random emails from people on the staff saying, can I please have... I wasn't even here, so I hadn't even seen the box. I didn't even know there was a box. And I start getting emails asking me for the things inside the box. Because, of course, people know I'm not a Swiftie. I'm not a person who's going to be putting on a Taylor Swift sweatshirt.
Mm-hmm.
everybody was fighting over this box. And the content, actually, people were fighting over the contents of the box and asking me, because I think they felt that, you know, I don't have
You're
teenage...
You're a good person to hit up. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have teenage children. I don't have any of this, that I'm a good person to hit
any
up.
Knowledge
that I
of pop culture. Yeah.
Right, that I'm not into pop culture. I mean, you know, this was not a Mark Anthony box.
Understood.
This was a Taylor Swift box. And so I'm like, okay, well, can I at least get there and see what's in the box? Can you just wait till I get there before you are asking me for the things inside the box? I mean, I can't even tell you all the people asking for things in the box. You know, I mean, I have stepchildren, I have step-grandchildren. I'm like, okay, here's the good news. All the children in my family are very small, and these were larger sweatshirts and things. And so I did give them away. But so then now the empty box is in my practically empty box is in my dressing room because I stayed. There were probably like 10 items there, and I stayed with about two or three of them because I thought, oh, I'll give this to one of my granddaughters. And then you show up. Wanting the actual cardboard box.
Well, there's a reason for this. So now, I was not a part of the swarm looking for these boxes, but I was in Whoopi's office yesterday while Whoopi opened the box, and she said, "Oh, Brian, your daughters love Taylor Swift. Take the box." And I said, "Oh, okay, that's so sweet of you. Thank you, Whoopi." So I took the box. My daughters are big Swifties, and it's sitting in my office, and I'm thinking, you know what? There's great stuff in here, but I'm not going to carry a giant. I take the train in every day. I'm not going to take a giant box home on the train. So I put it all into a shopping bag and I took it home. My daughters, it was like it was Christmas morning. They were almost crying. They were so happy. And my oldest daughter said to me, "Dad, is that the Taylor Swift PR box? You got the Taylor Swift PR box?" I'm like, "How do you know what a PR box is? You're in middle school. What is this?" Apparently, it's a thing on the internet where, like, Swifties, like the connected Swifties, have the Taylor Swift PR box. And then she turns to me and goes, "Where's the actual box? I need to open it up in my video that I'm going to post." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't have the actual box. I didn't want to carry it home." And she's horrified that I would discard the cardboard box. So this morning I came in and asked her for the cardboard box. That's what happened.
Right. So now you've got the cardboard box.
And a target on my back of my head because people saw me walking down the hallway with one of the Taylor Swift boxes. So the staff's coming for me now. It's very scary.
You know, I barely get it. Most of my friends and relatives rarely ask for things. One of the things they ask for is Taylor Swift is coming to Miami in October. And for some reason, they think I can get tickets. I guess these tickets are impossible to get. And they're
impossible, and they're
very expensive.
Yes.
Okay. I am not. I'm like.
And once she hears you gave her box away. Yeah.
Oh, no. Forget it, right?
Yes.
I'm not getting these tickets. I'm like, okay, does anybody want to go see Carlos Vives or Shakira?
Yeah.
Really? Do you really need
Taylor Shakira.
Swift? You know, can you just find a Latin artist to ask me for? That sure. I could probably help you with.
All right. Well, listen, we're appreciative, so that's all there is to it. We'll be right back after this.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text Podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit. Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's move on to some politics, because I want to get your take on Senator Bob Menendez, who's a friend of yours, but he was indicted on corruption charges and says he's declining re-election as a Democrat, but may run as an independent. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
First of all, this topic is painful for me, and it's personal for me. I've known Bob Menendez for almost 30 years. We are friends. And I don't know if you've ever been in the position where somebody that's very close to you that you've admired, worked with, he's been in my house. I was at his mother's funeral, gets in trouble and gets indicted. Yeah. And, it's tough. I have a very hard time reconciling the Bob Menendez I've known for 30 years with the Bob Menendez I'm reading about constantly in these indictments. I think he's facing a very difficult challenge right now, and it feels different than the first case he encountered. It feels very different, and I think people in New Jersey feel differently about it. I think the Latino community feel differently about it. For me, it's painful because Bob Menendez is a politician, is an elected official in Congress that I consider, I don't know if this will make sense to you, but I consider him pan-Latino. In other words, there's a lot of times that when you are a Mexican-American from California or a Puerto Rican from the Bronx or a Cuban-American from Miami, people think that you understand and represent the Puerto Rican community or the Mexican-American community or the Cuban-American community. But Bob was a guy, or is a guy, I don't know why I'm talking about him in the
past tense. Yeah.
Past tense, maybe because I don't think he's going to be in Congress next year. But Bob is a guy who... I could go talk to about the things happening in Nicaragua, who we could talk about the things happening in Cuba, who was always a huge voice and part of every immigration reform debate. So he's pan-Latino in the sense that I think he meant something, and he was an advocate for the Latino community, regardless of the ethnicity, regardless of the nationality. And that is not always the case. And regardless of partisanship, there were times when he bucked the Democratic Party on issues like Cuba. And stood up, even though it caused a lot of friction with Democratic Party leaders. So the point I'm getting to is if he's not reelected, I'm going to miss him terribly. And the Latino community is going to miss him terribly because despite everything we're reading, he's been a very effective senator for the state of New Jersey. And I think for the Latino community and for foreign relations. That being said, I don't think Bob Menendez should be running as an independent. And so it pains me to say that. I think Bob can't run as a Democrat. I think he would lose a primary. He would not win a primary. He is saying that he's going to wait, that his trial is this summer, and that he's leaving the door open to run as an independent when he is exonerated. That's what he put out a video saying that. Look, if he runs as an independent, I think what could very well happen is that he takes votes away from the Democrat running in the race, whomever ends up being the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate from New Jersey. And I think that the makeup of the Senate is so tight that that would be very harmful to Chuck Schumer, who has been very gracious and very loyal to Bob Menendez, because Chuck Schumer could have asked for his resignation. Chuck Schumer could have held a vote on his resignation like the House held on George Santos.
Right.
Chuck Schumer has not done that. He's given Bob has stepped down, has had to step down as chair of foreign relations. But Chuck Schumer has not pushed it further like people like Senator Fetterman have been wanting him to do. And so I think it's not a good look. I think it's disloyal, frankly, to run as an independent and put the Democratic seat at risk and put it in risk that a Republican wins in New Jersey, which could then be the difference between the Senate being Democratic or Republican.
Well, they're very serious charges. Menendez and his wife pled not guilty to obstruction charges, and he says he's hopeful his exoneration will take place
this summer. They're horrible charges. Yeah. I can't understand it. I hope, every time I read it, my heart hurts. I hope beyond hope. I hope against hope. I know that it's not rational, but I hope he's got some sort of magical explanation of why he had gold bars and hundreds of thousands of dollars stashed in his pockets. But
it's not a great look.
Yeah. Look, he beat a case once. It's a very high bar.
Yeah.
To prove it's a very high bar to prove bribery and extortion.
Yeah. Well, all right. I do definitely want to get your take on something else here because you're a Florida resident and you have a relationship here too, or you did at one point. Let's get your take on Senator Marco Rubio being rumored to be rising up on Trump's shortlist for VP.
Shortlist?
Shortlist.
Little Marco?
Little Marco.
Okay.
Even with all the nicknames Trump called him, what do you think of this?
You know what? I have a hard time believing it, and for many reasons. Number one, because I think Trump, Florida is not a swing state anymore. Trump is probably going to win Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Two, he's probably going to do very well with the Cuban American community. So I don't think
he doesn't need him.
He doesn't need him.
Does he need the money, the fundraising?
I don't think a Cuban American, to my earlier point from Florida, does that much with other Latino groups around the country. I also think Marco is a far better speaker, much more inspirational than Trump is. And I'm not sure that, I think that the most important thing to Donald Trump, beyond qualifications or anything else, is loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I think he will never put what's her name? Nikki Haley.
Right.
On the ticket, because he will never forgive her disloyalty. And I don't know that he will ever fully trust Marco after the things Marco has said about him and the things he has said about Marco. But you never know. You know, Marco for me is a great disappointment. There was a time when he really was thought of. He was on the cover of magazines as the future of the Republican Party, the savior of the Republican Party. And he's kind of disappeared. You know, I think he
started with the water bottles.
Yeah, I think he had a horrible. If somebody asks you to do a response
rebuttal
to a State of the Union, you should just leave the country.
OK, I was going to say yes, but I'll turn it down now. All right. Let's see. We're just about we're running out of time, but I want to talk about what happened at the commercial break today because we got some questions from the audience and one of them was about the podcast. And I'd just like to get your perspective on this.
God. I think you plant these people.
So there was
a man there who was asking why it had taken so long to do the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Who enjoyed the podcast the most? And all of us answered in unison, you do.
Yes. And then I appeared from the backstage because I wasn't paying attention until I heard the word podcast.
But you love this podcast. You put a lot of time into it and a lot of effort into it.
There's a whole team that does. Yep.
Apparently there's something called Bry Guys out there. Please explain to people what a Bry Guy is.
It's just my fan base. You know, it's like a Swiftie. You could be a Swiftie. You could be a Bry Guy. A lot of Bry Guys are Swifties. It goes back and forth.
Okay, so I think these are fictionalized.
However, what happened without me saying a word today, this person identified as a partial Bry Guy.
But how do I not know that you're not planting these in the audience to try to prove your point and then paying them behind my back?
I mean, that's a lot of effort for me to go through. But and I agree, I'm not above it, but it's not happening.
That's right. You don't have time because you're washing dishes and your laundry.
Yes. You know what, though? We're going to get some merch made, I've decided. I'm going to have some Bry Guy T-shirts made, maybe a mug. And when people identify as Bry Guys in our audience, I think I'm going to give them a T-shirt.
And are there Bry Gals or is it just Bry Guys?
Someone's asked that. There are, in fact, Bry Gals. I mean, I always thought of Bry Guy as an inclusive inclusive term for everybody, but if someone wants to identify, I'm not going to tell people their identity. If you see yourself as a bride gal, welcome to the party. It's
okay.
Great.
I have never been anywhere outside of this very small studio where I sit with you to do this podcast, where somebody has said to me, I love this podcast and I love Brian. So that's why I'm very skeptical and I'm very suspicious, because it only happens in the studio when you are there.
Listen, it might not happen at Jeff Bezos' house. I don't know like the circles you're in, but I'm just saying they exist. They're real. They will be
heard.
Okay,
I want people to stop me in the supermarket, in the gas station, and in the airport, which is where I spend half my life, and tell me. So please identify yourself.
Okay, Bri guys and Bri gals, if you hear me out, if you see Anna Navarro in the wild, please make sure you identify yourself as one of us, a podcast fan, a Brian fan, and let her know.
Approach slowly because I might get scared.
Yes, please do. Most likely, if they're fans of mine, you will. All right. That's all the time we have. Next week, you're joining
Thank
our friend
God.
Sherry Shepherd on her show. That's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. You two were with each other at the American Heart Association Red Dress Fashion Show. That was cool. And you're going to be on our show. So definitely see.
I love Sherry.
See Sherry. In the meantime, we will have a great weekend. On Monday, I'll be back with Alyssa. If you have a question or want advice from a co-host, check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline. Thank you for listening and have a great weekend.
Behind the Table is executive produced by Brian Tedda. Supervising producers are Nathan Getty and Summer Shake, with production assistant Emily Darcy. The vice president of ABC Audio is Liz Alessi, and the executive producer of podcast programming is Laura Mayer. Special thanks to Lori Hogan, Susie Liu, Meg Fierro, Molly Kaiser, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Frankie Perez, Audrey Mostek, and Dana Schaefer.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' group text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' group text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.